This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. And in today's program, we take a look at the new book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits: How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, by Greg Palast, who is our live guest in the studio today. So stay tuned for that. This is 5 o'clock shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we are joined in our studio today by one of the most dapper and thorough investigative journalists I have ever had the honor to know, in the person of Greg Palast, who is the author of the newly published book from Seven Stories Press called Billionaires and Ballot Bandits: How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. And in addition to Greg's crisp narrative and analysis, there is also a comics section that is very illuminating by Ted Rall, and an introduction by Robert Kennedy Jr. And Greg Palast is the author of many things, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and more recently, Vulture's Picnic. And he is a frequent contributor to the BBC, to The Observer, The Guardian, Rolling Stone, The Nation, and many other venues. But Greg has such a history of investigation. His various works have taken him into the company of venture capitalists, of nuclear operators, of oil spillers, arms merchants. But now, Greg, I think that you have come to the lowest of all species in your world travels, the American politician.
Well, actually, when you're talking about the spillers and the con men, the arms dealers, the vultures, the politicians are just their employees. So, you know, I mean, these are just guys that punch the clock and cash their checks. So, yeah, I mean, that's why billionaires and ballot bandits, the ballot bandits are just their henchmen, the billionaires. And, you know, there's really, with the exception of maybe Oprah, there's no such thing as a victimless billionaire. So what I wanted to do with this book, and working with Bobby Kennedy and Ted Rall, who's out of control, I couldn't control him. That's why he has a 50-page comic book there inside. But the idea is to go after, tell you who these guys are that decided to rent the United States this year. We have a $4 billion election minimum. And who are these guys? Where'd they get the billions? Well, from you, but how they got it from you. I mean, they also got it from the Congo. I mean, I've been chasing these guys around. In fact, the book opens where the Iceman, a guy named the I don't give these guys these names like the Iceman, the Vulture, the Snake. The Iceman sits down with Karl Rove, and Rove says, "I have a way to beat Obama." And the Iceman says, literally, this is true, "I'm in." Pulls out a checkbook, writes a $20 million check right there. And by the way, doesn't even bounce, unlike my checks. And then he says, and there's more where that comes from. He's talking about putting another $50 million. So that's the Iceman. On Friday, the Snake and the Vulture were having lunch with Mitt Romney and a guy named Ken Langone, who's so evil, he doesn't even have a nickname. And what their plan is, and when they say they want to beat that they're going to beat Obama, it's not about like giving you a bunch of commercials saying, whatever, convincing you to vote against Obama or his mama or any of that stuff. God bless America. You want to tell people this whatever crap on TV. I don't care. But the scheme is to knock down the vote. In fact, the chapter two is called Karl Rove, by the way, chapter one, where he says America's becoming a place where we have elections like those countries that are run by colonels in mirrored sunglasses. And I have a picture of Bush in his mirrored sunglasses. But in the next chapter, he says how Obama will lose. This is his own words. And he says, by knocking down 1% of the black vote. And it's not like he's going to convince black people to vote against Obama. The question is how he takes it away. And I go through, in another life, you know, it's kind of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, like Indiana Jones. I also had another life where, just like him, I was at the University of Chicago, just like Indiana Jones. And I was a professor of statistics, believe it or not. And so I go through these raw statistics at the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, which doesn't really assist our elections. it assists the guys taking them. But anyway, I go into their files, which are now closed.
They assist us to death.
Yeah, right. They. By the way, those files are not closed. But before they were closed up, I was able to get the raw information that 5.9 million votes and voters were wiped out in the 2008 election, this time the worst. 2.7 million votes were cast and not counted. That's the official word. 3.2 million voters had their names removed from the voter rolls that were otherwise legitimate voters or blocked at the polling stations. That's the official numbers. Those are minimum numbers. This time it will be worse. And it's not by accident. And I'll tell you what, I will give you a free copy of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits if you can guess the color of most of the voters who have been knocked off. And we're not guessing that because, like in places like Florida, it says BLA next to the names.
Our guest is Greg Palast, author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. And Greg, you delineate the methods and techniques of voter suppression and as well indicate ways that people can remediate or fight back against that process. Mm-hmm. And I want to take a lot of time and go through these techniques with you today.
Okay.
But I'd like to first put this discussion in a up-to-the-moment context with the situation with Mitt Romney, where unlike Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men, he actually says, you can't afford the truth. And he said to a wealthy fundraiser event in Boca Raton that there are 47% of the votes that Barack Obama or the Democrat would have, and those include the freeloaders, the self-entitled, the self-identified victims of American society, as it were. Now, he went on to say that the Republicans have in their pocket about 45% of the electorate. Does this therefore mean that what is going on, Greg, is that the 47% is being reduced by about 4 percentage points through various machinations in different states?
Yeah, about four. Yeah, it's about the good math. Obviously, you weren't the victim of No Child's Behind left schooling in America. Good math. Yeah, about 4% wipeout. And you say, well, 4%. But remember that the presidency of the United States in 2000 was determined officially by 537 votes. Now, people may remember that Greg Palast is a reporter who broke the story about how in Florida, Catherine Harris knocked off thousands and thousands of black voters, calling them felons. And the number, by the way, you know how many were felons, were illegal voters, was zero. Zero, like nothing, not a bupkis. They're all innocent. Every one. I checked with the attorney general. He went through the list himself. So I actually checked with the law enforcement guy. How many did you bust? None. Why? Because they're innocent. They lost their vote. That was the election. So when you knock out 4%, that ain't no joke, baby. That is the White House. That's the Senate. That's the Congress. According to the Brennan set, actually the University of Minnesota, which tracked it, said seven Republican Senate seats are due completely to what they call mistaken purges, except that the mistakes are generated. And you just talked about that dinner that they had. Let's bring it up a little, like you say, updated, okay? Let's bring it up to Friday when there was a breakfast of the vulture, billionaire, the snake, the billionaire, with Romney, just a millionaire. He can't even park their car. And then the third billionaire, Langone, like I say, too evil to even have a nickname. Ken Langone, though he does have a hospital named after him, Ken Langone is the guy who came up with the list of black people to remove from the Florida voter rolls. Now, when you talk about a meeting of billionaires and ballot bandits, and they're the same thing, with Romney, that's not a very nice combination for those guys to be having breakfast. And remember, the vulture only eats dead carcasses, so the smell from the dining room was like, because I try to get in there, except the guys with, you know, the earpieces in their ears, and they were reaching into their coats. I didn't think they were going to throw...
Speaking into their cufflinks.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to throw bread rolls at me, so I got out. But I did want to say, why are these guys here, and what is it that they want? Because, you know, what people forget is that after that video, Romney said to me one of the more chilling things. When he was asked, why did he do that? He said, because you have to give people with a lot of money a reason to give it to you. And so he's basically saying, what are they getting in return? And Langone has said, this is the guy without the nickname, he's so dark. Langone said, he's not donating to Mitt Romney. He actually said, I'm investing. He said, I evaluated Mitt Romney as I would any other investment. There's a rate of return, and I want to know what's being returned to these guys. So that's, in Billionaires and Ballot Banners, part of the story is the investigation of how they got their billions, why they need to put in Romney to keep it, and to get more. And this is one of the creepiest investigations I've ever done. I know people watch Greg Palast on Democracy Now!, and in fact, my last story was hunting down Mitt Romney's key donor, Paul the Vulture Singer. I was in the Congo. I didn't think he was going to end up as Romney's big sugar daddy, but it was because of the Congo story. Because what happens, I went to the Congo and uncovered that Paul the Vulture Singer was literally taking the money to end the cholera epidemic in the Congo along the Congo River. It's a whole complex financial deal. You can read about it in the book. I'm not going to explain it here, but that's why he's called the Vulture, okay? He basically sucked out the money meant to end the cholera epidemic. As a result, I put it on the air in Democracy Now! Where it had a huge effect in America. Well, no, it didn't. Zero. But in England, when I put it at the top of the nightly news, they then branded Singer and his crew an outlaw. All throughout Europe, his business is now completely outlawed, but there was a bit of an effect. And I don't know, and maybe BAI should take some credit for this, but I hate to say probably not. But Barack Obama, after the broadcast, probably a lot of pressure from Europe, and Hillary Clinton went into a federal court and asked them to put the Vulture out of business, that he was a threat to the international system of finance. And under a strange provision of the Constitution, a good provision, the President of the United States can go and say that activity of an industry and use of our courts is impedes the conduct of American foreign policy. And he said if he brings down the world financial system, that's kind of a bit of an impediment to foreign policy. So this is Singer. So he has to get a guy who's not going to carry out the Obama-Clinton threat. And I want to tell you that I wish I could say Obama did it because he cared about the poor kids in the Congo with the cholera. If you read the book, you'll find out he did it at the request. He went golfing with the head of United Bank of Switzerland and came out of the golf cart, I kid you not, in Cape Cod. Came out of the golf cart deciding that he had to take out the Vulture because United Bank of Switzerland was very upset because he was going to bring down European banking and European interests in Argentina. So Obama was not upset about the cholera, but he sure as heck, as soon as he heard that UBS was going to lose, that the Swiss were going to lose some money on some Argentine investments, it was like, this cannot be tolerated. So he went into federal court.
So there was a risk that something more than those sweet Swiss truffles could have melted in the case of the banking with Mr. Singer. But he's not the only one involved.
Yeah, that's right.
In buying candidates, and this name just keeps coming up, the Koch brothers, who, as I understand it, were very instrumental in putting the rhetorician Paul Ryan on the Republican Party ticket. But I think maybe their roots might go deeper. What are the Kochs doing?
In fact, the subtitle is not on How to Steal an Election, 9 Easy Steps. It says, Greg Palast investigates the Koch gang, Karl Rove, and their buck buddies. I've been investigating the Koch gang since 1995, when I did a story in The Guardian called The Richest Guys You've Never Heard Of. And at that time, and by the way, the Kochs are not Republicans. David Koch was going to run for governor as a Democrat in Kansas, and he ran against Ronald Reagan in 84 because he said Ronald Reagan was a socialist lefty. True. And by the way, and plug your ears if you're a good Democrat, where did Bill Clinton come from? Where does a guy from Dogpatch, Arkansas become president? He was the head of the Democratic Leadership Council. That was his surfboard into the Oval Office.
Or as I called it, the Democratic Bleaching Council. because of the reactionary social policies that it advanced.
Yeah. Well, where did these guys come from? The answer was a $100,000 donation from the brothers Koch. Wow. And so you have a lot of Koch babies. And then there's a story which is going to be coming out in which is in the book called Manchurian Candidates, about a deal cut between the Kochs and who were caught illegally funding through their corporation a bunch of Republican candidates. And they were about to get nailed on criminal charges. But then Bill Clinton, who was already had a little bit of their lubrication, he had another problem. He had his own billionaires. And so you'll read in the book about a trade of billionaires in which Bill Clinton agreed to let the Kochs off the hook in turn, and as long as the Kochs and the Republicans let Clinton off the hook for $1 million in money from China. But now, don't worry, the activities that they were caught at, and by the way, I want to thank Republican Senator Fred Thompson, you know, the guy that plays the prosecutor on Law and Order.
This will get out of hand. It will get out of hand and people will die.
Yes.
From the hunt for Red October.
Yes, exactly. He actually thought that he was a lawman. I mean, he got carried away. And so he actually was going to bust both parties. And then Trent Lott, I have the inside information from both senators and staffers. Trent Lott went to him and said, it's not your night, champ. So they took away all his powers. They closed his committee. They closed his investigations on the Kochs and on Clinton. Mm-hmm. And the only thing they let him do was shtup the blonde counsel for the committee. Now, Mrs. Thompson, I should say.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. And our guest is Greg Palast, author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. And I do want to go through those steps with you, Greg, but referring back to a point that you made earlier, the Koch brothers are largely the funders of things like the American Legislative Exchange Council. And we have seen popping up like mushrooms across the country new intense regulations for people to exercise what has traditionally been their routine vote.
Yes.
And the suppression of people of color, people of poverty, people of progressiveness, people of obstruction to the mass accumulation of wealth are being targeted, I would take it. You refer to what happens with African-American voters because of the, quote, accidental, quote, misidentification by name, as if the names of black people in America are subject to the same mistranslations and false matches and false misses as the transliteration of Arab names into a database. So what is the mechanics of purging people from a voter list? And is there a converse or an accompanying use of digitized statistics in order to get a very fine resolution on who is brought into the vote or taken out of it? How does that work on a digital level?
Well, those who are, because I know that you're a great programmer, so you would know this stuff. Catherine Harris is just playing with her floppy disk compared to what's happened now. That was created for her by a company called Database Technologies, later Choice Point, and a few changes since then, from Langone, the nicknameless billionaire. Now, there are two new databases. One is called Themis, which was created by the Koch brothers. The other is called Data Trust, which was created by Karl Rove, otherwise Bush named after a flower, Turd Blossom. And Mr. Blossom, with Data Trust, which he created under contract with the Republican National Committee, the Kochs thought it was not even sophisticated enough. It was only a $50 million operation, so they had a really good one. But now the Vulture, by the way, Singer, has asked them to work together. So you have these two giant data mining operations, as you call it. And what they do is it's a very sophisticated program. In fact, I can't say I understand all of it, but I've seen the effects because I get some of the inside documents, luckily, because they have some guys that are sharp as marbles in the operation make some mistakes, including, for example, if you think the Florida felon purge is over with, forget about it. The latest list, which I can show in here, says, for example, that Robert Moore, I'm sure there's a Robert Knight, too, by the way. Robert Moore committed a felony crime. So they have a cool algorithm that takes Robert and looks for Nick, you know, change. It's like Bobby. So Robert, the criminal, can't get away with voting. So Robert Moore commits a crime. Bobby Moore is removed from the voter rolls, but it's Mr. Robert Moore knocks out Mrs. Bobby, B-O-B-B-I Moore, who is B-L-A on her records. In Florida, the race is put down on the records, and they use that as the... So the match criterion is not the name, but the race. Like that? So you have how many African-American Robert Moores are there? Or Rob, Bobs, Bobbies. And if there's not a match in the middle initial, they call that too bad. If there's a junior, not a junior match, doesn't matter. It's an algorithm. Now, if credit cards work that way, every bank in America would be bust because no one would get the right bill. But so they know how to do it in when they want to do it. They also know how to get it wrong when they want to get wrong, and that is the right answer that they need. So right now you have tens of thousands of African Americans in Florida who are losing their vote. This year, with the old Catherine Harris trick, it's just that they've made it even more sophisticated. And by time anyone is figuring out what's going on, they can't react. And it's gotten really crazy with the, you know, there's a Juan Gonzalez, by the way, that happens to have been deported in America one time. And so Juan Gonzalez is all over Florida, are losing their votes as suspect aliens. Now, what is a suspect alien? When is American suspect unless they've been convicted of something?
What happens to someone who is falsely put on a disenfranchisement list, and whether it's in Florida or across the country?
Oh, it's across the country. That's the other problem. We had in Billionaires and Ballot Bans, they talk about something called the Help America Vote Act, which Bush and Rove came up with. You know how when they try to help you vote, Bush and Rove. And it not only empowered...
Once again, they help you to death.
Right. You know, I'm laughing because otherwise I'd cry. You have to understand that when Catherine Harris got caught, the solution was to give not only every Secretary of State the authority to knock off voters, but actually require them to look for suspicious voters and knock them off. Now, under federal law, no one is supposed to lose their right to vote within 90 days of a federal election. And that doesn't... It has zero effect because every Republican Secretary of State has been calling an emergency. As far as I could tell, the emergency is that Romney's dropping in the polls. So, for example, in Colorado back in 04 is an example, we had an emergency call for the Secretary of State of Colorado. I call her in the book the Persian General. She wipes out 50,000 felon voters in Colorado, calls it an emergency, has to get them off the voter rolls right before the election. There is one problem with her list, which is that it's not illegal to vote if you're a felon in Colorado. And so she literally just wiped out people who absolutely had the vote.
There is another issue with the digital purging and pattern and list matching and permissiveness of errors and hash matches with the BLA black voters. Is there an input to this or either of these two systems you refer to from people's other behaviors that allow a triangulation, an identification of an individual, even though any one data set may not contain the name, but you can narrow it down and figure out who it is. And so are people also, do you suppose, targeted by trademarks of their online behavior, trademarks of the kind of books they buy that might be used by the Koch regime in order to say this is probably someone who's not going to vote the way we want to? Are the computerized lists targeting people in that way too?
Yes. And actually they're proud of that because what they can do is they can say, here's evidence that someone's registered under a false name, false address, that they're not really a citizen. Or, you know, for example, in Florida, you can't vote if you're insane unless you're the governor. So in other words, they have, this is not used they're not even being sneaky. They talk about the grand sophistication of their systems to help identify those so-called suspect voters.
Terrorist voters.
Yeah. And you know, and one of the problems we've had is, of course, I have another chapter in Billionaire's Ballot Ban. It's called I'm Depressed because, for example, National Petroleum Radio ran a story saying that there was really that the Republicans, in fact, had strong evidence that there were alien voters on the voter rolls. And I got a hold of the NPR reporter to ask, I try to find out, Well, I always thought that strong evidence of an illegal voter was you found someone illegally voting. They didn't have anyone illegally voting. All they did was say that the Republicans found name matches. Well, yes, I do know that there's a Juan Gonzalez in Florida. What? And so, but that's the problem. Our press, I do this work for BBC Television, for The Guardian, and now Nation Institute, and, you know, obviously Democracy Now, BAI. But you don't have the mainstream press not only not listening, but they're literally swallowing this banana whole. And at worst, you have like the New York Times saying, well, these lists are flawed, meaning that they can be, as long as you fix them up, they're okay. Like I said, the number of felon voters in Florida that we have found after long investigation is zero. And the attorney general backs us up because I said, would you arrest someone that was a truly illegally registered voter? Absolutely. So how many have you arrested? None. We have six open cases out of 94,000.
There was a study done by News 21 out of Arizona in which a team of investigators determined that the amount of fraudulent voting across the nation is virtually infinitesimal. And yet we have these new suppressive laws. What do you make of that?
It's worse than that. They know the reason it's worse is that they know it. The hysteria, I call it the fraudulent voter hysteria factory, which has been promoted by the GOP. And by the way, I go after Democrats here. So, you know, this is not partisan, but the GOP has made a big deal out of the fraudulent voter. This is like the sleeper cell. This is, you know, this is like the Red Scare, the Red Menace, you know, the Yellow Peril during World War II.
The dirty voter.
Right. So what's happened is they've used this fake hysteria. Tova Wang, Dr. Tova Wang, who is, by the way, with the Heritage Institute, very conservative, was appointed by the U.S. Civil Rights Commission and the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission to investigate voter fraud. She did so. She comes from a conservative background, and she's a professor of statistics with this background. And she actually said the incidence of voter fraud, the chance that a voter will vote fraudulently is less likely than a voter will be hit by lightning. And by the way, I actually did the calculation. It is 60 times more likely you will be hit by lightning while voting than commit an act of fraud, because there's six people a year that we find that have actually committed voter fraud. And so in Indiana, for example, another chapter in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits called Nuns on the Run, Indiana has a voter ID law. An insane picture voter ID law requires you to have basically a driver's license. And what it says is, well, we have to stop voter fraud. There has not been a single case of voter fraud, that is someone stealing someone's identity to vote their ballot. Not one known case in 100 years of record keeping. And yet we now know with dead certainty. The evil statistics is that you know too much of the numbers, and it's about 80,700 voters will lose their vote, about 80% of those voters of color in Indiana, which was a swing state, but with that voter ID, it's already swung. It was Obama's state last time, because remember that Indiana is really a suburb of Chicago, and the cows won't like that, but so once you knock out the African American and Latino vote there, it's good night for Obama. And not that I'm there for Obama. It's just that to take away people's right to vote.
Are you saying that Nate Silver's projections on the electoral count for the national election, he and other analysts say that this is pretty much a probable Obama victory this year, given the power of incumbency and of the keystone states with the big delegations of electoral votes. But are you saying that there are termites under that house, that this inevitability is actually being eroded, even though it's not visible to us?
I take Mr. Turd Blossom Rove at his word. Because that little flower, when he says Obama's likely to lose, he's looking at the numbers state by state. And the question is not, we don't run national elections. It doesn't matter if Obama's winning by 15 points. It doesn't matter. This is not, we're not buying record albums here.
We have quantum elections,
yes,
statewide.
And so what happens, that's why our election was supposedly determined by 500 votes. And in 2004, by games played in Ohio, but by the way, New Mexico and Iowa, clean supposed Iowa, that was one of the dirtiest states in America. And so what's happened is that it is a very good chance that Obama could lose it. And I don't mind if he loses it. That's not the point. The point is if he loses it because the people didn't vote for him, if they vote for him and he loses, that's the evil. And that's what they're trying to do. You know, it's very clear. Rove said, if I can knock down the African-American vote, 1% in North Carolina. He gave a breakdown state by state. Mm-hmm. And it's his history of success in that area is enormous. Kennedy and I went through the 08 figures. People think because the skinny, dark guy got the vote that there was no theft. 5.9 million votes and voters in the dumpster. It's only because the victory was absolutely crushing that we didn't see it. But we did see it in the Senate, and people shrugged and said, eh.
Our guest is Greg Palast, and nobody shrugs when he talks. He's the author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. The book comes with an illustrated exegesis of the voting problems in America.
I think it's called a comic book.
It's a comic book by Ted Rall.
Illustrated exegesis.
Yes. And an introduction by Bobby Kennedy Jr. And Greg, I just want to continue you rather than taking a break at this moment, because there are the 9 methods, and I believe you identify them as purging, caging, spoiling, ejecting, blocking, rejecting, prestidigitizing, tossing, and stuffing. Can you help people get a concept of what they might learn by reading this book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits?
Well, you're going to get the 9 ways that they take it out of your pocket, that they pickpocket your vote. So like purging, for example, that's removing people from the voter rolls, doing the Catherine Harris on them, which they're doing again. Caging is where they send letters to you. And this is where Rove's machine is really beautiful. They send a letter to your home address. Do not forward. If it comes back, they say, aha, fraudulent voting address. Except if you look in the book, you will see that the fraudulent voting addresses on their caging lists include the Naval Air Station at Jacksonville, Florida. Now, why, Mr. Rove, wouldn't a soldier be at their military base? Why is it that they're not there at their registration address? Well, in other words, go to Afghanistan, mail in your ballot. It gets rejected because you're voting from a fraudulent address, and you don't even know it, so you can't challenge the challenge.
So there's a service disenfranchisement.
Yeah, that's the other thing, that the Republicans keep talking about the Democrats trying to knock out the service vote. I have in my hands, I feel like Joe McCarthy, except the difference between Joe McCarthy and me is I actually have the documents in my hand, and you can take a look at them yourself in the book.
57 documents, right?
Yeah, right. You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, I do. You can look at these caging lists, and there's the Naval Air Station, the Naval Air Base. We spoke to one voter, a serviceman who was sent overseas. He was challenged. He said, well, I got the vote. I said, you mean you mailed in your ballot? Did you know it was counted? Well, no. I said, you were on a challenge list, my friend. Sorry. Your vote was thrown in the garbage. And that's the problem. You don't even know it, except in the state of Oregon, where they do tell you if there's a problem with your ballot and you get a chance to correct it, because they're a mail-in only state. But outside of Oregon, you mail in your ballot? So that caging is number 2. And they, again, it's easy for them because they can target the BLA voters. By the way, there, one of my favorites, is that they targeted older, it's because they're sophisticated, elderly Jewish voters in Miami areas, you know, they're going after the elderly of Zion.
They actually have one of the highest proportionate voting percentages, I believe, that
does. You know, solid Democrat, but they, in August, when these letters went out, they're snowbirds, they go north. Mm-hmm. And so they're not there. So they went after the bluish, you know, it's the Jewish and bluish, but the idea is that obviously they don't care whether they're Jewish or Hispanic or African-American. The issue for the Rove operation, this came from Rove's office, by the way, these emails. I got them because, well, anyway, let me just tell you. The reason they picked them out is obviously the color of their vote, which is Democratic. But as Bobby Kennedy, and I don't make conclusions about law, but since he's the dean at the law school at Pace, he said, this is a crime. You go to jail because they're clearly racially and religiously profiling. You just have to look at the lists. I mean, it's a go-to-jail crime, except that Rove isn't in jail. He's sitting on a $250 million fund and the data trust machine, help us all. his assistant who sent out the caging list, Tim Griffin, is not in jail. He's in Congress, where he's the number one promoter of the XL pipeline. And his assistant, Matt Rhodes, is not in jail. He happens to be the manager of the Mitt Romney for president campaign.
Amazing. Spoiling.
Spoiling. That's a simple one. Here, if you get your chads hung, it's anything that ruins your ballot. And you think you voted, but in fact, there's some technical reason why your vote didn't get counted. We make fun of hanging chads, but what it is someone punched a hole in a card, and you didn't see that little bitty thing that hung there. Well, in the good old days, the Supreme Court said, your intent is what counts, and clearly you try to vote. The number, now here's the evil thing about it. If it were random, like, everyone's chads get hung, it's kind of random or something, whose vote get lost? The U.S. Civil Rights Commission of Dr. Phil Klinkner did this study, found that your chance of your vote spoiling is 900% higher if you're African-American than if you're a white voter, 500% higher if you're Hispanic. Now, why is that? Is that because black people are too dumb to vote? No, because like they get bad schools, bad hospitals, bad everything. You get the bad voting machines. So they get the cheap crap voting machines, which don't work. Plus officials know it. And sometimes they kind of help it along. And for example, I tend to use Florida because it's a vital swing state. Mm-hmm. The poorest county, the blackest county in Florida of 67 is Gadsden. They had a vote scan machine where you fill out and the ballots are read by a scanner. But they couldn't afford scanners for all the precincts. So those precincts, the ballots are sent to a central scanning point. Well, when the ballot has an extra mark on it, some coffee stain or a voting official put their thumb on it and put a mark on it, the ballot's thrown out, it's spoiled, it's gone.
Oops, along
but if
the way.
You are in the white rich area next door in Leon County, Tallahassee, where the Jeb votes, you make a mistake, you put in the in-precinct scanner, it comes back, and you get a brand new ballot to do it again. So they say, here's your mistake, and you get another chance. So in the white precincts, you couldn't make a mistake. In fact, there was not one spoiled vote in Leon County in the last election. Not one spoiled, but in Gadsden, it's epidemic. And it has nothing to do with education, it has everything to do with money.
Does the introduction of Diebold machines, the electronic voting systems, and the absence of a paper trail affect the disenfranchisement of spoiling?
Yes, absolutely. We call it in the book prestidigitizing, as in presto changeo, a digital magic. It's magic, we call it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going beyond the complexities of whether there's some guy who can change
hack
your
change
vote, hack and change, because you're the hack expert, I'm not, so I didn't pretend to know what I don't know. But I know something simpler, which is that we have found, this is the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, the official report is that if you are a voter of color, your vote will spoil, is more likely to get lost in a computer 500% more often than a white voter. Now, is that, once again, is that because of voter education or whatever the heck that means? It's nonsense. What it is about, we found, is that in black precincts, they weren't giving poll workers the passwords to open the things.
In the black districts, do they deliver the votes to be counted in the backseat of the police car?
That's one of the big issues. In fact, there is, I'll skip around the list because Bobby Kennedy wrote one of the chapters called Stuffing. It was something that he and I had written for Rolling Stone, but they couldn't fit it all in. So we put it in our book because it's old-fashioned, and computers actually can help in old-fashioned vote stealing because you can crank in votes. So, for example, in Alabama, Don Siegelman, who they just, threw in the can, Siegelman won the race for governor, Democrat in Alabama, and then suddenly they unannounced it, said, oops, it seems that we haven't properly counted all the ballots in one county. Suddenly the courthouse was closed, the ballots were recounted, and suddenly there was like an 8,000 vote shift in a single county when they corrected the amount. No one was allowed to watch, and because it was electronic, there was no paper trail. They simply erased the electronic history and said, oh, we got the machine to work correctly now. And they held on in a closed room, no observers, the police keeping the Democrats out, the press out, poll watchers out, no one could go out. and they suddenly announced that Siegelman had lost. Now, most guys like Gore and Carey go to the mat. Siegelman made the mistake of screaming bloody murder. So then they pulled out the file on him, and now he's in a federal pen. They do not mess around. So that's one of the other problems. You try to blow the whistle on these guys, and you're in trouble.
We're speaking with Greg Palast of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and we speak of the racial imperative, the anti-Latino imperative that seems to be pursued by conservative interests funded by Koch through the ALEC and other mechanisms. And I'm wondering, Greg, if it, in addition to the obvious targets of color and of heritage, whether there are other groups as well who might be suffering from disenfranchisement, such as, let us say, as a class or as a group, women, let us say union members, let us say those whose activities may be presumed to predispose them against the interest of the wealthy.
Well, that's where we get to things like blocking. And, for example, we do know that in Wisconsin, we lost about 97,000 voters on the new ID laws, mostly students. That was aimed at students because Wisconsin has the biggest concentration of university students in America at the University of Wisconsin.
Many of them quite progressive and radical.
Yeah. And listeners of Pacifica Radio at WORT, bless them. And so what happens is with the influence of Pacifica, they definitely don't want those kids to vote. So they said you have to have a state photo ID to vote, but with one exception, the state photo ID for the University of Wisconsin does not count. And so you had all these students who could not vote because they simply didn't have the state ID. Certainly a lot of them don't drive. And so we figured the count I got, again, from the U.S. Assistance Commission and Brennan Center here, bless them, here in New York, we figure about 97,000 voters, mostly students, lost their vote in Wisconsin at the gubernatorial recall. So, yeah, so they go after the students. They go after poor white people, too. Remember, this is vote theft is class war by other means. And that's where we get the rejecting of, that's another one of the items, which is the absentee ballots. People mail in their ballots. They assume it's all been, you know, everything is fine because I've mailed in my ballot. What you don't know is that 488,000, just short of 500,000 absentee ballots officially were rejected in the last election on the most cockamamie reasons. The wrong size envelope, the wrong color envelope, postage due. Most of these are 2 ounces, not one. You signed your name on the outside with a middle initial, but in the inside without it. Use a different address on the outside because you now have a different mailing address. Or, this is my favorite, suspect signatures. I asked the Secretary of State of California, whose signatures are suspects? People with names like Mohammed.
Get out. Greg Palast, there's another technique. Under which category would you place this? When there are deceptive mailings or announcements or posters that appear to be official that misdirect a voter through a counterfeit, a psychological counterfeit, and they tell people the wrong dates, places, and situations.
We have that. In fact, there you go. There's your Themis machine that the Kochs put together. That's Themis. When it went into business in Wisconsin in the recall. You have to understand, Wisconsin of June was the dry run, or maybe the wet drown the kittens in the bathtub run for November. That's where they took Themis for a walk. And the Themis machine was able to identify very sophisticated, likely absentee voters from voting history, who you're likely to vote for. And they ran a two-prong operation because about 1 in 7 absentee ballots are thrown in the garbage. They filled out ballots for their voters with computers, put on the right ballot, the right postage, the right address, everything, even who to vote for. All you got to do is sign it, lick the envelope, and put it in perfectly, and it'll be gathered for you if necessary. So they turned the system around so that they could have impregnable absentee ballots for Scott Walker. Then they created something. The Kochs group is called Americans for Prosperity, mostly theirs. And their chief in Wisconsin became the chief of something called United Sportsmen of Wisconsin. And here you get aiming at the lower and working class Democratic voter who was known to be a likely absentee voter. They got a and a gun owner. In other words, they had the licenses. They knew who was what, and they said, protect your rights. And, obviously they knew they were going to vote against Walker. They said, here is United Sportsmen Wisconsin. Send your ballot here by this date. The address was wrong. It was their address. And the date was, if you got a good ballot, the date was after the allowed date for mailing it in. So they ran this two-sided operation. So Themis is just cool as can be.
Our guest is Greg Pallast, and there's yet another of, I mentioned the nine ways to steal an election, and that is physical intimidation, the presence of people with everything but the hood in the hood,
yes,
trying to intimidate people from voting. How does that work, and what category do you put
yeah,
that
in? Yeah, that's the old-fashioned.
New Jersey is famous for that.
We put that in the ejecting, because one of the things that they do is they say, if you have, and this is where they're going after, especially the Latino voters in the Southwest, and I talked to a senator who really was very savvy about this. His name was Barack Obama, but then he became president, and he had, like, an amnesia problem with this issue. And I kid you not. Though Obama actually was very sharp on this. But he's been afraid to touch it because it's racial. And he doesn't want people to remember that he's African-American. So this is no joke, by the way. This is a big problem we have with this administration. Don't count on them to protect you. But yes, we have these groups, especially in Latino areas, that will say if there's a problem, if you have an outstanding award, if you owe child support, anything like that, that they're going to check your records and your ID, and then they'll nail you. And that is the type of intimidation that they use, and they do tend to scare people off. And even like guys like Willie Steen, who was this guy who never committed a crime, was named as a felon, it's very intimidating when you go in because they say they're going to have you arrested.
Greg Pallast, in this closing moment of today's very revealing encounter about billionaires and ballot bandits, where would you say the nation is in terms of the franchise to vote? In relation to the Voting Rights Act of 1965, to the suffrage movement, where are we now with the high capital digital disenfranchisement movement of the Kochs and the Roves?
You have a new situation that we could call lynching by laptop in the book. And the thing is, Bobby Kennedy's dad wrote the Voting Rights Act. And the reason why he's so emotional about this is that we're back where we started, okay? It's not over with. And for people to say, oh, what's the difference? Martin Luther King, I'm sorry, it may be overdramatic to you, but he took a bullet so people could vote. All I'm asking you to do is go online, get a book, get some information, go to ballotbandits.org and download the 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits. There's your ballot condom. It gives you 7 ways to try to protect your own vote at least and help protect others. This is not about Obama. It's not about his mama. It's about the right to vote, which we can't have taken away no matter what. Otherwise, the billionaires vote for you. They want you to take your own vote away by discouraging you. So the last thing I want to do is, despite telling you all this stuff, we've had a history. From the suffrage movement, the abolitionist movement, the civil rights movement, the environmental movement. They've been trying to take away our votes forever. They have taken away, and yet we march on, we occupy, we scream, we holler, we vote. And that's part of the process. It's not over with. Just because it's not so easy anymore, just because we can't win with 51% of the vote doesn't mean we don't do it. I get really all whipped up when people say, I guess there's just no point. No point for you, man. I didn't do this for fun. I'm doing this because I'm not going to let these guys take my ballot. They'll have to snatch my ballot from my cold, dead hands. And that's why you go to ballotbandits.org, whether you read the book, buy the book or not, at least get 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits. It's a free download.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. That's Greg Pallast. I'm Robert Knight. And further information about the book is at ballotbandits.org, but also gregpallast.com. And we congratulate you and Ted Rall for the election comics and Bobby Kennedy Jr. for the introduction. And you, interrogating and investigating the Koch gang, Karl Rove, and their buck buddies. Greg Pallast, always a revelation when you're here with us. Thank you for joining us on 5 O'Clock Shadow today. The book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, published by Seven Stories Press. And that concludes today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow, produced with Thiago Barroso and engineered by Michael G. Haskins, our live guest today, Greg Palast. I'm Robert Knight in New York. Please stay in touch with us with an email to theshadow@wbai.org.